and would continue to be present in the future as the individuals also. Therefore, the two Purushas, the living entity, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, never lose their respective identities. Actually, one who is a self-realized, one who is self-realized, engages himself in the service of the Lord perpetually, both in this life and in the next. Indeed, for devotees, there is no difference between this life and the next. In this life, a neophyte devotee is trained to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in the next life, he approaches that Supreme Person in Vaikuntha and renders the same devotional service. Even for the neophyte devotee, devotional service is considered Brahma Bhuya Kalpate. Devotional service to the Lord is never considered a material activity. Since he is acting on the Brahma Buddha platform, the devotee is already liberated. He therefore has no need to practice any other type of yoga in order to approach the Brahma Buddha stage. If the devotee adheres strictly to the orders of the spiritual master, follows the rules and regulations, and chants the Hare Krishna mantra, it should be concluded that he is already at the Brahma Buddha stage, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Manchayo yatkarya bhakti yogena sevate sabhanam santichetam brahma bhuya kalpate. One who is engaged in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So, in my last Bhaktivedanta class, we were having a discussion, some of the devotees were listening to some lectures by very big devotees, they're called in India. And he was saying that unless one is 100% full of the Lord, that should be the Swami, that they have to perform the various Vedic purification rituals, ceremonies, they're obligated to do that because they're not on the platform of pure devotional service, and therefore they're actually, if one is not on the platform of pure devotional service, actually they're obliged, not being purified, to perform the other different purificatory processes in the ways that lead one to the stage where they can eventually take up pure devotional service. But actually, so, you know, it's interesting. This is a very difficult point to understand, even this one. That's the point of closing that. But we've got same devotees even in this one, preaching something which is completely, the Prabhupada says something completely different in this third course. So, it's not an easy thing to understand. Now, of course, Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Dharma Sharan Dharma. Because, you know, for the mass of people, if the devotees, which they will be, given the opportunity to be seen as leaders of the community, the state, the nation, the world. Many people will just take two devotional services, but of course others may not directly take to Christian consciousness, in which case they will still have to be engaged under the direction of the authorities, and they will, you know, be taught to live to perform their duty according to their natural system and to live a pious life with their family. So, very important principle. So therefore, Dadi Maharshan said, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, Krishna says that to Arjuna, Krishna has described that process, that we must perform our activities in such a way that they're in line with the regulations of the scriptures, and that everything is centered around pleasing the Supreme Lord Vishnu through yoga. All the activities of the Dhammacharan are one form of yoga or another. All the duties of the Dhammacharan are one form of yoga or another. Whether those are the sannyasis practicing Dhyan or Sangha, whether those are the chapters and the Vihasa, the Dhammacharas, all performing some type of yoga. That's described in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, many different types of yoga. All culminate in transcendental knowledge, Krishna says. If they don't perform yoga, they become implicated, they're considered thieves, that they have obligations to so many persons in this world, the demigods. What we take is given by them on behalf of the Lord. If you take something without acknowledging and offering return, you're a thief, you become a reaction. The great sages, the animals, the cows, the trees, other human beings. You know, every day we jump in our car, we drive the roads. We're obligated. If you go up into the Dandenong Ranges, you can see the pictures of the people building those roads. They've got horse and buggy carts up these muddy, dangerous sides of the mountains there, chalking out roads, and they died doing that. You know, in those days, there's no, work cover, safety inspectors. People just died building those roads. We just go there, let's go through or something. But we're obligated to those persons. So that is the voting process. Now, because if one performs yoga, so there are many different types of yoga, but if you perform yoga Vishnu, then all your obligations to everyone will be satisfied in that one act, and therefore the Vedas encourage that. Then Krishna tells Arjuna that, but if one takes pleasure in the self, which is the theme of this verse, become spiritual advancement of life, advancement of self-realization, coming to this Brahma-buddhi platform. I am pure consciousness. Krishna tells Arjuna that if one is, I'll read the verse, 3:17. Yes. Tapmati evishaka matripashtaranda akmandira santushtasta sharakaryamda vidite. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, now that self there has a capital S. Because self-realization, Prabhupada says, he says, and don't think you may miss this, but Prabhupada describes self-realization. Well, everyone want to hear what we self-realize? 2 seconds. You want to be self-realized? You understand this. I'm part of the Supreme Whole. I'm the servant of God. Self-realized. Yeah. Done. Business finished. That's it. So, that concept, I'm a little spirit soul, and there's the Supreme Purush. I'm a person, eternally, but a little spirit soul, eternally Purush, person. Then there is the Supreme Person, one Supreme Person maintaining all other persons eternally, and one who understands, yes, I am a little spirit soul being maintained in all respects by the Supreme Person, that person's self-realization. The one who takes pleasure in that, their whole life is centered around that wonderful realization, that I'm eternal. Here I am in the material world, I have nothing to gain, nothing to lose. I really have no business here. So the Prabhupada said, Krishna had no business in the medical, etc. And Arjuna. So, therefore, he says that for one who takes pleasure in the self, his human life is one of self-realization, which is again the nature of spiritual, the Bhagavatam, and who is satisfied in the self only, in a capital S. Fully satiated, for him there is no duty. So then Krishna tells Arjuna, as he has summarized in the second chapter, when you become situated in the self, you become indifferent to everything you heard in the Vedas. All those different prices, accounts, yoga, 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 something, you become indifferent to all of that. So, he explains that. A self-realized person has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. So, it describes here that such a person whose life is one of self-realization, engaged as always in relationship to pleasing the Supreme Lord, they have not none of those duties to perform. They're not obligated. As Prabhupada puts it, Srila Prabhupada says it like this. He says, for one who understands Krishna, so of course, to understand that the Supreme is a person, that is the goal of all the Vedas. The goal of all the Vedas is to understand that Krishna, to understand Krishna. All the Vedas are teachings. If you understand Krishna, oh, he is the Supreme Person, and I am his servant. We're all his servant, spirit soul, then there's nothing further to be known. And that is, and that, to understand that, if one either has this incentive to have performed all the Vedic processes, or if they haven't done it, they get the result anyway. So, so Prabhupada says that for such a person, then all the Vedic religious rituals, penances, sacrifices, they're all nonsense. So you know, for the body of the Lord, then all of those other men, they're all nonsense. God, is it nonsense? And then he says this, that I'm quoting this, Prabhupada is speaking this in 1966 in New York. So can you imagine who his audience is? Four lessons. We'll get to that. And then he says, and if one doesn't know Krishna, then all of one's vain ritualistic activities, penances and sacrifices, they're all nonsense. I don't know. So Krishna is saying that one must perform those activities. One is not on that platform, their life is one of self-realization and Krishna consciousness. They must perform those activities. But it's for the gradual process of purification. There are all different forms of jagya, and all those forms of jagya purify one's existence and gradually promote one to the point of transcendental knowledge. That will take one to the doorstep where one may then have a tendency to hear from sadhus about the eternal self, and amongst those sadhus, if one happens to be a devotee, and one hears that the absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, not an impersonal Brahman cosmos, then that person hearing that may take up devotional service if they hear from the devotees. Otherwise, they'll never understand. But even if they read the Gita, if they don't hear it from the body, I was talking to some people the other day. And we were talking about the value of the year, I guess we need the year and like that. And we talked the different principles and so many things you can learn. And then someone popped out this strange comment. Because they watched the Mahabharata on Netflix and things like that. And one of them said, yes, and then Krishna revealed to Arjuna his divine self. I said, what? Yeah, that universal form, his spiritual, revealed his form as God. I said, no. But the person is God. That is his universal form, but that is a little external. The actual supreme form, everything is coming from Krishna, but they do what? So, many people who read the Gita, that's their understanding, is that it's a universal form. And in fact, there's a book by Paramahansa Yogananda, Yogi, very popular. And he says that Krishna teaches this process of Kriya Yoga in Bhagavad-gita, where the universal form is to be meditated upon as a supreme. And a lot of the very fashionable people read it. I was reading that as a teenager. I'm 61 now. And still reading that book. And Paramahansa Yogananda. So, unless they hear from the devotee, they'll never understand that the ultimate goal of the Vedas is to know the person who is the supreme person, and that person is Krishna, Bhagavan. So, if they don't understand that, they need to reform the different Vedic principles. Kami Yogi, Kami Yogi. So then Krishna says to Arjuna, you don't have to do that. Still, Krishna says that, but whatever a great man does, others will follow. The Prabhupada rephrases that Arjuna, I want you to be a great example that people will follow. Therefore, and he said, even I perform duties. So I'm asking you to perform duties. You have no need to perform those duties. So Prabhupada explained that Arjuna had no business, nor in Krishna, in the battle of Kurukshetra. They have no duty to perform. Krishna said in the same chapter, he says, there's no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems. Nor am I in want of anything, nor am I in need to obtain anything. And yet I'm engaged in prescribed duties. So, because he's God, he has no... he's not obligated to perform prescribed duties to satisfy the demigods. He's obligated to the demigods. He's obligated to the saint persons, he's obligated to anyone. Everyone is obligated to him. He has no obligation that I have to perform some duty to anyone. He's not in need of anything. Even as a little baby on the lap of Mother Yashoda, he was completely God, the personality of God, Bhagavan, full. He didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to do any work to become God. He was, therefore, even as a little child, these very powerful demoniac personalities tried to kill him. And even the little baby, just a little bum, who was killing his demons. Krishna says, but I'm engaged in performing duties, because if I didn't, people will follow me. And then the result is, if people who need to follow duties, those who are not on that platform of their life is one of self-realization, Krishna consciousness, that the individual soul engaged in this eternal relationship with the Supreme Soul, for those who have to perform their duties, they need to follow someone to show them what those duties are and how they perform. Therefore, Krishna himself. So Krishna doesn't have it. But of course, because he's God, he performs his duties to show us what an ordinary human being should do. But because he's God, there's a little twist to that. So he has 16,108 points. So at the time of the baby here, you see here, Prabhupada says, Krishna looks at that maybe 16, 20. Arjuna looks a little older, he says. Still quite young. Krishna was about 86, somewhere 86, 90 years old at that stage. He was a great grandfather. He had 10 sons and some daughters to each of the 16,108 wives. He had each of them got married and had 10 sons and some daughters, and then each of them did some. At this stage, Krishna there has about 10 million tandems. So, but still, he's showing his God, but at the same time, he's just doing all the, in each time, he's just one person doing his ordinary affairs. So, therefore, actually, Krishna is saying, I want you to perform your duty. And Prabhupada says very interesting thing. Srila Prabhupada says, Arjuna perfectly performed Kama Yoga. Sometimes when you say to the devotees, or you're doing Kama Yoga to insult you, I'm doing bhakti. I remember one time in one of the devotees preaching that on the sound. No one's doing the Vajra Reserve, you're doing the Kama Yoga. You're going out and selling things. Everyone got so upset. And I hear this, Prabhupada saying, Arjuna performed Kama Yoga. But his Kama Yoga, he performed Kama Yoga to show people who have performed Kama Yoga, but his activity of performing Kama Yoga was an act of pure devotional service. The Krishna wants it, and because, as it says here, Arjuna, you have no duty to do. It says, such a person has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duty, nor has any reason not to perform such work. Now, when Arjuna got to the battlefield, he actually arrived there with the purpose of fulfilled. He was expecting a whole different result, but then when he saw that, I'm going to have to kill all of these persons who are relatives, teachers, friends, people who are very dear to me, worshipful to me, respectful, for the purpose that I thought was going to be fulfilled, then I'm not going to do my work. So then, Krishna explained to him, you don't have a duty to perform, but for the sake of leading people in the right way, I want you to do it. And therefore it says that such a person has no reason not to perform such work. And so Srila Prabhupada explains that, in the second chapter of the Gita, this is also explained, the art of work. Prabhupada explains it like this, there's a machine, just like this machine here. Taking photos. There's an art to it. Someone who knows it, they can do it. And sometimes someone who doesn't know what they're doing, there's a lot of different pieces there that can be pushed in the wrong way, and wrong buttons, and all hell breaks loose in 2 seconds. So, this is the material world is this machine which the Supreme Lord is operating, because he knows the art of operating this machine, the material world. And he tells us what the art of working with this machine, this material world, and these material bodies, is that if you perform your work without any purpose to fulfill, then you won't get the karmic reaction that forces you to take birth again to be caught up in the cycle of birth and death. There should be no purpose, even if one performs the prescribed duties, one is performing that with no purpose except the Krishna wants it. And if one is not performing one's prescribed duties, one is doing that for the purpose of Krishna. So therefore Arjuna performed Kama Yoga because he was engaged in pure devotional service to Krishna. And Kama Yoga is within that, but more. Kama Yoga means that, in one sense, generally when people perform Kama Yoga, they have a purpose. But Arjuna performed it without a purpose, therefore it's also not. The purpose of Kama Yoga is I'm doing my duty, but I'm getting so much karmic reaction. And the art of work is to, not get that karmic reaction and not to take birth to attain liberation. Arjuna, was acting only for the pleasure of Krishna, and in other words, every step of Arjuna, every blink of his eye, every movement of his body, every word was a yajna, was an offering, was a sacrifice to Krishna, just for the pleasure of the Lord. Yajna emotion. And, you know, just like we perform sankirtan yajna, dancing. The dancing is yajna. Eating the shower, yajna. Part of the sankirtan movement. So Arjuna, he was always engaged in yajna. There's no question that there's any karmic reaction, but nor was he interested in liberation. In personal liberation, any form of liberation. He was quite happy. If Krishna, if you come to this material world and perform these pastimes as described in the Mahabharata, then I'm happy to come. At the end of the very Mahabharata, right, very end of the Mahabharata, the Pandavas, they're looking, where's Krishna going? Wherever he goes, we'll go. They're not interested in liberation, where Krishna goes, I think. So, therefore it's, you know, not karma yoga in that sense. One who performs karma yoga trying to burn up the sinful reactions of their duties and trying to, you know, get themselves out of suffering, they're performing karma yoga. The devotees don't do that. So, this, as Srila Prabhupada is saying, so we have a bit of purple here. So the point is that one performs this duties without attachment. Now, devotees also, like Arjuna, you know, one of the greatest needs in this world, as you said, is that generally, if Krishna said, if we don't see the right example, the main result is this unwanted population of children. And that is cause of ruination to the world. So, Krishna showed that generally, the man and the woman, they should be properly married and raise children. And raise children in such a way that they're wanted, they're planned for, by a purification ceremony, they draw in the pure souls, and they guide them in such a way that they can stop the cycle of birth and death, become fixed up in their life and dedicate to self-realization and go back to the spiritual world like that. So, therefore, you know, the whole world, all over the world, that should be the situation. Currently what happens, like in Melbourne, they're having protests on the street. Stop killing the women. You know, the men, you stop killing the women. So the current situation is that because the population, Vanasankarana, born from, people's sex attraction to each other, and children pop out here and there, children like cats and dogs, I don't really care what it is. You know, then, instead of having family life, where actually good children are born and good children are trained, now we've produced children like cats and dogs. Now the government, you take care of that. So they're protesting to the government. They're not saying, oh, why don't we properly get married and have nice children and look after them? No. We want to run around producing all sorts of, you know, unwanted children. And then when there's problems, well, the government, you stop this, you fix this. At school, same thing. You know, the children go to school and the teachers are expected to be the parents. And they're protesting again, you know, you teachers, you should show more responsibility and do this and that. But actually, there should be family life troubling about his children, they might have the problem, is it? So we have the exact problem that Christian says, if you don't have this basis of society where you're producing good children, you won't have a civilized society. You can't act like cats and dogs. And then instead, how do we get all these problems like cats and dogs? Because you're behaving like cats and dogs. So, you know, human lives. Therefore, the devotees, and this is one of the big contributions that, my perspective, that I've seen. You know, in the West, of course, in the early days, not many from the Indian community, but the benefit is that now we have a strong community. You know, that culture of solid family life is so strong, you know, it's just natural. And, you know, it's a very good example. People look at it and they want to know, you know, how they do that. They're so close, you know, they're so friendly to each other, so stable like that. It's a very good example. It's a very good example within this time and out of this time. But the care should be that they should not be attached to those duties. Now, one of the things that Prabhupada saw, we'll talk about this a little bit, one of the things Prabhupada saw was that when he was in India, they were so attached to those duties that they wouldn't take to Christian consciousness. So that's the danger. And this is where, you know, we learn from each other. And then the Western world, Prabhupada went to America. And he saw, he seen these hippies. They've got no attachment to their family. He's like, this is wonderful. You know, this is like, where do you see such attachment? But also, they've got no attachment to the ritualistic processes of religion. So I can speak to them about the relationship between the soul and the supreme soul, and they just look it up. So Krishna's tablet, you know, 1966, Prabhupada's telling them, Krishna, the gopis, Krishna's got 16,000 wives, Krishna did this, you know, Krishna told Arjuna, kill Khan, and they're on, you know, and the devotees, yeah. They just lapped it up. This, he was the supreme person. I love him. We love Krishna. He's so wonderful. Let me just, whatever Krishna wants, let's do it. They had, and now there's a verse here in this Bhagavad Gita, we see this. Now Prabhupada detected this. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verse 44, it says, Purya Visayana Tene La Viti Tene Sophi Sadi Gashoka Yoga Shasata Dhammati Bhati Tete. By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles. Now, yoga means to always, as Prabhupada says like this, always keep touch with the Supreme Person. Always keep touch with him as yoga. By virtue of the divine consciousness, so there's a spiritual consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles even without seeking them. So they're just looking for it. It's just like they know something missing. They're not sure what they're looking for, but that's what's missing in life, that particular thing. Not money, not more rituals, it's not in the Dharma. It's this connection to the soul, it's a new soul. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist always stands above the ritualistic principles of the scriptures. Now this purport, advanced yogis are not very much attracted to the rituals of the scriptures, but they automatically become attracted to the yoga principles, which can elevate them to complete Krishna consciousness, the highest yoga perfection. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 333.7, such disregard of Vedic rituals by the advanced transcendentalists is explained as follows. There's a disregard. You know, there's a contemptuous attitude to it. I'm not getting involved in that stuff. Keep it away. O my Lord, persons who chant the holy names of your Lordship are far, far advanced in spiritual life, even born in families of dog ears. Such chanters have undoubtedly performed all kinds of austerities and sacrifices, bathed in the sacred places, and finished all scriptural studies. You know, the Prabhupada was criticized, you know, he's going over there to those monasteries and dog ears, isn't it? And here this is how the scriptures describe dog ears, yardas, and lectures, and yet that they have an attraction to chanting the holy names of Guru. So then, now the famous example of this was presented by Lord Chaitanya, who accepted the poor Haridas as one of his most important disciples. Although the poor Haridas happened to take his birth from a Muslim family, he was elevated to the post of Namacharya by Lord Chaitanya due to his rigidly attended principle of chanting 300,000 holy names of the Lord daily. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And because he chanted the holy name of the Lord constantly, it is understood that in his previous life, he must have touched all the ritualistic methods of the Vedas, known as the Sutta Brahma, unless therefore one is purified, one cannot take to the principles of Krishna consciousness or become engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada saw in these lectures and meetings and what have you, in the West, they're completely attached to their family, they're completely attached to the wealth of their wealthy families, and you know, the education which sort of, you know, pushes you in that direction. They're detached from the ritualistic sort of, you know, aspects of religion. And if I ask them to chant Hare Krishna, they chant Hare Krishna enthusiastically. So, you know, Prabhupada saw, and you know, someone asked me a question about that, you know, those first couple of years. Oh, don't you think Srila Prabhupada, because you know they've got this simple background, this and that, that they should perform the purificatory processes of Vedas and what have you? You know, in order to actually become Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada said, you know, none of these boys have any Vedic background. None of these boys and girls have any Vedic background. And they're chanting the holy names, they're dedicating their lives enthusiastically 24 hours a day in excess, he says, to serving Krishna. And none of them have a Vedic background. But it's understood that whatever in the past, that may be there in the past, but that's the past for that. They don't need it now. They just come straight to the point. So, and here Prabhupada gives this example of Haridasa Kaur. Now Haridasa Kaur, Prabhupada, is also a principle that such a person who takes pleasure in the soul, always chanting the holy names of the Lord, there's no reason for them to perform any duty or not to perform that. So, in the dead of night, it's about midnight, Haridasa Kaur, he's chanting his 300,000 names, and there was this very envious Zambian, I think it was Rama, you know, that level, and he, you know, why is this Muslim getting so much respect? Everyone's calling him Sadhu, honoring him. I'm the person that should be honoring. Rascal. I'll show all these people what a rascal he is. And he hires one prostitute. You bend there and you make him fall down. And then we'll, you know, beat him and drive him out of town. So anyway, this prostitute, you know, Harry has to go. Oh, yes, you come to see me? Yes, you're such a handsome young man. Harry has to go with that. 25. I want to embrace you and enjoy with you. And Prabhupada said to others, oh, yes, yes. So we should do that. First, I just need to finish my private rounds, and when we've done that, we shall enjoy. So I walked through the night until he finishes 300,000 pounds. And then, of course, you know, the girl came to bless us and, come tomorrow. Come back tomorrow, then we shall enjoy. As you come back. First, I just need to chant somewhere else, have a finish. So he chants his 40th round. She was resting. So she came back the third round. He chants again. And then she falls at his feet and admits, because she's become pure, you are such a sadhu. You are just so immersed on the spiritual platform. And so, you know, please forgive me, save me from my offense, what I've done. And so, Haridas Thakur said, he said, so she told him about his enemy. Haridas said, I knew all along. I knew who sent you and why you come here. He said, I would have gone the minute you came. Because Haridas Thakur was a renunciate and a renunciator. And he shouldn't have stayed there. Actually, his duty was to get up and leave. But he said, seeing you in such a wretched condition, I stayed just to believe you. And I should give up that business and chant that business. Which he did. So there you see that again, such the devotee for the pleasure of Krishna preaching, they have no need to perform the duty just for the sake of following rules and regulations for the sake of without understanding this connection with Krishna. So he didn't follow that. And there's no reason why they shouldn't follow if that's also helpful, you know. So we have devotees, they get nice and married, they take brahmachari, they take sannyas, and they follow all the rules and regulations as far as it's helpful for society. And in the Varnashram, Dhani Varnashram Dham, they'll need the examples of the devotees following that. But at the same time, the devotees should not be attached to it. They should actually have no purpose to fulfill in reforming them or not reforming them. And as Arjun, he had a purpose to fulfill when he went to the battle of Kurukshetra, and then seeing what he had to do, he had a purpose to fulfill in not performing his duty. And then when he became Krishna conscious, he was above transcendental. His only business was what? Krishna wants me to do, I shall do, and if Krishna does want me to do, and therefore one is above duties that should be done and should not be done. Transcendental. That is the transcendental. That is a Brahma Bhuvaya Kalpate. Now, Prabhupada in this purport, in the Bhagavatam, says a very interesting thing, that even the neophyte devotee in Krishna consciousness who takes up this, who hears from the spiritual, you just have to do. That one time Prabhupada was giving a lecture on Karma Yoga, and then at the end he says, just do what Krishna wants you to do and don't do anything else. You know, he says, you know, okay, I've given you the philosophy, that's all you really need to know. You know? So basically, you know, that principle, so in 1966, Prabhupada's saying that, he's explaining it, why people do Karma Yoga and why they don't have to do it. And while they still do it to show me, then he's explaining all of that. But he's saying, you just follow what I want you to do. And if you do that, as he's saying there, even though the Nephites, you are situated transcendentally from the very beginning of your life, from the very beginning of your Shema. Not that in 10, 20, 30, 40 years you read, you know, from the very beginning. So, and the example of Prabhupada is that, you know, we may be able to, you know, say we're riding a bike, we may be able to move at a certain speed, maybe, you know, 10, 15 kilometers an hour. Actually, the ones in the races, they go 60 kilometers an hour, which really hurts when they fall off. But, if you, Prabhupada says, if you catch the back of a train, then you go at the same speed as that train. You go without any effort. You're not even, your legs not even moving. So, when you hear Vishnu Maharaj, he followed exactly what the scripture master said, and that is the secret. That in those days, although they didn't follow any aspects of Vana Shandam, they didn't know anything. It was Prabhupada, trying to introduce that at that point. He said, just do what I'm doing. I'm showing you how to do it, and I'm telling you what to do. Just do that. Immediately I'm changing the platform. And they did that. They did that. And therefore, they moved through life at Prabhupada's speed, at Prabhupada's speed. But you can still do that today. There's no reason why not. It's very careful, we have to be very careful because, we have this benefit of this very dharmic aspect of the, Indian congregation. It's a real safety. There's a lot of sense of duty to family. Property union, doing everything nicely. Be very careful not to become attached to that. If it somehow impedes us, just catching hold of your Prabhupada's lotus feet and just coming straight to a transcendental platform above what is good and bad in this world, where we have some purpose in doing our, duty or not doing our duty. That's the danger. That's the danger. If there's no purpose in performing our duty or not performing our duty, and we're doing something because Krishna wants us to do, to set a good example, to be properly seated, something, and we should do the spiritual master, the vice president, that's fine. As soon as we have some purpose, it becomes Hinduism. And that's different from what Prabhupada can offer us. That's the danger. And we should be very careful not to lose sight of that. So, that history with the early Western devotees is important because let's just catch hold of Prabhupada and just go directly. And they were literally coming from sinful life, but it didn't matter, they could just go straight to the transcendental platform. We should never forget that. The Hindu community, the devotees from that, Aryan base, let's put it that way, they can learn from that. Otherwise, maybe tendency to get caught up in the dharmic aspect, like changing my aspect. And the Western devotees can learn from the Aryan race. So have that, to be able to set a good example to society. Because not to imitate Sukadeva Goswami or the Six Goswamis, but when people look at the Hare Krishnas, They need to see some stable people in stable families. Because we want the whole world to then be Father. So we need to learn from each other about that. But here in this verse, very important that the main thing we should keep in mind is our life is meant for our only attachment, our only business, is just this being absorbed in this life of self-realization, which means, you know, absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna, and chanting the holy names of Krishna, and serving Krishna, and pleasing Krishna. Through our whole life is meant for that. When we're doing that, and if we're performing any activities we're performing that fosters that goal. Because everyone has to work. We all have to work. We have to maintain the body, and if we have families, we have to maintain the family. But, you know, that has to be done. But Krishna says in the Gita, he says, my devotee is very dear to me who is not attached to any residence. I love reading that verse when I do a house walk. they've got this, they've spent years, you know, they've got the house, and it's just taken them so long, and they think, oh wow, you know, you put so much focus on this myself, you know. You want to take a walk around? You know, when I go there, I do like a ceremony, and they go, you want to take a walk? I think I better, you know, show some interest in the house. And, but, you know, they're like, they want to do a tour, you know, so, but, you know, basically, I speak that verse, you should really have no interest in any residence in this world. Otherwise, you should have gone a little off track there. Isn't it? You know, in the back of the Gita, you know, in knowledge, one of the principles of knowledge, in that, I'd like to read this one as well, one of the verses for the Vyasa, 13th chapter. But then I was funny. I like to give them a little shock and see their reaction. See the fear on their faces. He says, you know, these things comprise knowledge. The perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. Blessing to the baby. So that. And then you see, okay, you know, and these are devotees. They would appear on their faces. So, you know, there's something that's, you know, that purpose, that sort of attachment we have to be a little careful with, you know, is our attachment just for self-realization, just for Krishna consciousness. You know, or are we just a free soul? We're doing things for the purpose of setting a good example and being properly situated to a vision. I'm hoping we come to look at that. We have to set that. And if we just take that self-realization aspect, we're immediately on the transcendental platform. Any questions or comments?
While you are explaining about universal form. I had like a like if you could comment more about Arjun's reaction, like when he saw the universal form. Maybe I didn't understand it properly. That he felt to me like he was looking, like he realized that Krishna is God, but didn't he already know that Krishna is God before? But after realizing, he apologized to him for, like, you know, treating him casually and becoming too friendly with him and all that. So why did he realize that after seeing the cosmic form? And also, after that one verse, Krishna says that this form that you are seeing is very difficult to behold. So why is that?
Yes. Arjun seemed to realize that Krishna was God after seeing the universal form, and therefore felt a little embarrassed or ashamed, apologetic that he had been so and the second part is that you know, why the universe was born. The Lord is the universe born, so I have to say, or the form of Krishna?
The form of Krishna, like Krishna says that this form that you are seeing is very difficult to behold. I don't know if he's saying that with reference to the universal form or his.
His form of Krishna, the form of Krishna is very rare. So, for instance, in the pastimes of Vana Maharaj, Krishna, the universal form was also shown. So there are differences, but the Krishna's form was not shown. So some of the different pastimes involve the universal form being displayed, but Krishna's form is not always displayed, and the universal form is displayed. Krishna appeared once in the day of Brahma. The universal form may be displayed on different avatars at other occasions. But the universal form itself is very difficult to behold unless one is given the blessing by the Lord to be able to perceive that. The form of Krishna is even more rare. Krishna says even the demigods forever seeking the opportunity to see that form of Krishna. But Arjuna felt very when he, yes, he understood that Krishna was God, always. Prabhupada, you know, at one stage, you know, he said that when Arjuna was refusing to serve Krishna, he was under the Mahamaya of the material, you know, the wooden. But most commonly, when Prabhupada speaks in terms of Arjuna, he was saying he was playing a role. So both were there at the same time. That Krishna created such a situation in which case Arjuna came under that, you know, he saw things in the material way, not in the spiritual way. And he saw, he it made him pull away from serving rather than enthusiastically serving. So that's the function of the consumer energy. But, you know, throughout everything, Arjuna simultaneously went along with that, knowing that he's sort of in that situation of Krishna's arrangements. And, you know, he had a sense of that, you know, this is Krishna's arrangement, and Arjuna is, in one sense, playing a role, but that role, that circumstances were so, you say, realistic, you know, affecting Arjuna to the very core. That in another sense, he sort of also went with that state of being bewildered. But, you know, it's not an ordinary situation because, you know, for instance, it's like saying sometimes the devotee falls down in Krishna consciousness and they go and they smoke, you know, drugs, whatever, and they drink alcohol, and they eat meat, and so many things, they hold an underworld. But they know they're in Maya, and that's the difference. They actually know that I'm in Maya. You know? So, you know, Maya is like, that's an illusion. But they know they're an illusion. I'm so much Maya. One thing that you knew he was mine, but not quite like it wasn't really a fall down. His relationship with Krishna was so strong that really he never lost that. You know, he understood this. You know, let's just go with Krishna with this. Where's this coming? You sort of going with Krishna. Because Krishna, you know, Arjuna most likely been in that circumstance with Krishna before in other universes. So, you know, it is, so both were there. So it's just basically he's facilitating Krishna's pastimes, and at the same time, you know, he's being affected by his circumstances. And that's because the Supreme Lord is always, we are always under his control. And that was point. That was Prabhupada's point in saying that the Mahamaya, one way or another, Krishna was fully under, Arjuna was fully under Krishna's control. That's the point. The way that Krishna put him in the Mahamaya, he's under Krishna's control, and Arjuna felt that. I'm in the Mahamaya. Krishna's in control. He's doing it. Now I'm free to mind. Krishna's in control. He's doing it. That was Arjuna's mentality. You know, the devotee, we have that sense also sometimes. We fall into mind. Oh, you know, I'm in mind. I'm under Krishna's control in this mighty state as a devotee. And then, now I'm engaged in those responsibilities. Now again, I'm under Krishna's control. So we have that sense. But Arjuna is much stronger connection with Krishna. Both of them. So he knew he was the personality of Godhead. But that form of the universal form where the Lord reveals his power, even someone who knows Krishna so well like Arjuna is terrified of that immense power. You know, sometimes, you know, if you go down to the, like, say there's a hurricane, you know, people won't come near the beach. Finally, you're going to get a mile near the power, the fury, you know, there's, and like, they have these tornadoes now. People just cry all night in fear. They're just like, it's a nightmare. They're counting the each second. You know, sometimes in America, they have a tornado that goes past about 30 seconds, and that 30 seconds seems like hours. They say that. It's like hours and hours, we're like 30 seconds. Or when a plane drops out of the sky, whoosh, you know, 1,000 feet in, you know, 2 seconds, bang, everyone smashes in the room, and you just, you know, it's like that 2 or 3 seconds, and it just seems to go forever. So, you imagine Arjuna seeing all the power in the universe. It's terrifying. Even Arjuna, you know, Genesis, it's very terrifying. So, that's what's here. and there's like a transition between coming back to his normal, relaxed state of Krishna. So he went from complete fear to a little bit, no more fear but apologetic, and then relaxed. See? It's not like you go from complete fear. Another, you know, there's a transition, an apologetic is like a transition. So, is that an incident? Why wasn't Krishna one of the Dasavatars? Dasavatar means it is a song, a composition by Govindadas. What's that? Jaya. And he describes 10 principal avatars. too long. So, you know, 10 principles over time. And in that list are some of the most famous. Right? So, they may not necessarily be, it's not that they're better or what have you, but the most famous ones, the people immediately, he's saying that, Buddha. All the most famous ones that people can. So quite often the song is like that, you know, the essential things that people can relate to very quickly. He's put that into that song. Yeah, so the question is that we should be always absorbed in Christian pastimes. We don't do that, but sometimes we do the homework, and we have earning money and cleaning the house and so many things. So what should we do? What Srila Prabhupada taught us that when we hear in the morning about Preeti Maharaj, and that he heard from Sanatana Maharaj, he's got these wonderful little four Kamaran devotees, little children, they're like little children that they're great sages and travel all over the universe, and his Preeti Maharaj is ruling the entire planet. So, as we go through the day, these things sort of stick in our mind. And if we hear, so the main of all the things that we do as devotees, the main thing that we do is to hear and chant about these pastimes, and then we can remember them. The more we hear and chant, the more we remember. So you see that devotees who are really good at hearing and chanting, all day long, no matter what they're doing, they're thinking of Krishna. So, I'm not going to but I did have an occasion where I think of Krishna. I remember one time I was digging a hole, right? It was really hard dirt. So, I'm trying to dig a hole, I'm going to put a post in. I'm going to dig the hole about this deep in hard dirt. Back there. Really hard to think of Krishna. Anyway, while I was doing that, I had been reading about Lord Radha. So while I was doing that, this thought of Lord Radha came into my head. I thought, that's so wonderful. You heard he was here. And then I thought to myself, actually, Lord Radha, he had the special tusks. He can pick up the earth. He literally bounced on his tusks. And I thought, why did he assume the form of a pig, a boar? Because boars are really, they're the perfect instrument or design to get right down to the murky depths and they slip out, and they find that, there's the earth there, and it's all dark and mushy, and they pick it up, they got a good grip with their tusks, they bring it up like that. And I thought to myself, I'm using the wrong shovel. Right? Because I had this long handled, flat nosed shovel. And I thought, I need a small handled shovel. As you go down, the hand gets away with a pointy tip. And so I went and bought one, and I dug that hole really easily. So, you'd be surprised how everything you're doing, Krishna has done something to do with that. See, when you're doing your homework, you then, Krishna also had to do his homework. But I guess, he was doing a lot of fun things. How to pretend to be someone that you're not. Imagine they taught that at school. You should be a teacher. When they teach those things, and all your kids be thinking, let's go and how to disguise yourself for someone else, something practical, something you use. But you know, as the more you hear about Krishna and his pastimes, actually everything we do in this life, every single thing, there's a wonderful thing that Krishna did related to that. But we hear about more and more, and then that ability it comes, and then I was digging that hole and I was in ecstasy. Thank you, Lord Rama. You saved me again. You saved the earth, and then you saved me. Prabhupada, he died.